This episode is brought to you by Honeycomb Credit. Heritage Radio Network listeners can learn more about the power of community capital by visiting honeycombcredit.com/HRN. This week on Meet and Three, we dedicate our stories to elders, grandparents, and family members who came before us.
Some people called on the phone, "What time is your appointment?" "Mine's 2:45. Our friend, the dentist, he was 3:30. And it was like a social event.
It's a small island. A lot of them I knew when I was a kid. So it was, you know, to really help them feel like they weren't alone.
It's partly this communal nature of food. And so it can operate as a bridge, not just between neighbors and friends, but also between the living and the dead.
Listen to Meet and Three wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, 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 welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. It's Tuesday, April 13th, 2021. And recording remotely. I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host here on Beer Sessions Radio. And we're doing a special show about Vermont. And the backstory is, for me, Vermont, everything always seemed to be clean and pure, and the ingredients were better than anywhere else, in particular New York. And this is going back 10, 15 years. And we've seen so many changes in the local ingredients that are available for beer, in particular hops and grain. So we're going to have a focused talk about Vermont hops today. So let's go through and everyone quickly introduce yourself. Please say your name and where you work. Start with Bob.
I'm Bob Grimm. I work down here at Foam Brewers and one of the partners and co-founders. And I work at the original location right on the waterfront in Burlington.
Great. Sam?
My name is Sam Keen. I work at our, I'm with Foam Brewers. I work at our, also one of the co-founders and partners here. Currently the head brewer at our production facility in Hinesburg, Vermont.
Great. Julian?
My name is Julian Post. I'm a co-founder of the farm Champlain Valley Hops in Starkesboro, Vermont, and I'm also the farm manager here.
And Max?
My name is Max Licker, and I am the sales manager for Champlain Valley Hops in Starkesboro, Vermont.
Okay, so we got the introductions done with. This is a pretty cool show. So Max reached out to me. We have a good friend from Heritage Radio Network who's now a journalist up in Burlington, Jordan Barry, and she's connected us to quite a lot of Vermont folks. So Max, I know you went to NYU Food Studies, and you've got quite a background. Just tell us how you landed at Champlain Valley Hops.
So I'm always looking for cool and interesting jobs in the food world and the agriculture world. I've bounced around a lot. I've always thought that Vermont would be a great place to live. And when I find out I got to move here, I was searching around for opportunities, and I got connected with Peter Briggs, whose wife graduated from the same NYU Food Studies as me. They were looking for someone to help sell their hops that they had just grown. And I thought that I could be the right person for that job.
Wow. Well, that brings up the first thing I want to talk about. We're not going to go exactly in order, but with Julian, how do you create a market for that? I mean, tell us how you started, because I always thought that everything was grown in Vermont, but apparently it wasn't, right?
Yeah, you know, the hop industry is super interesting and niche, I guess, is kind of the word for it. There are 60,000 acres of hops in the whole country, which there's probably as many acres of corn grown in the county of Vermont that we're in. But the U.S. actually produces 40% of the world's hops. So I like to say that just a little bit of hops goes a long way. And basically that really small acreage has such a huge impact on beer, obviously. And so in Vermont, and then the other kind of relevant piece of information on hop growing in the U.S. is that 98 or 99% of hops in the U.S. are grown in Washington, Oregon, and Idaho. And so that little sliver of a 1% is what covers the Northeast and Michigan, which are kind of the other main hop growing areas. So we are kind of pioneers on this side of the country. Vermont and New York used to be the largest hop growing states in like the mid 1800s before Prohibition. And so we're not starting over, you know, we're not starting from scratch here, but we are kind of starting over because there haven't been hops here for 100 years.
We've lived through that in following New York the last 10 years. We've seen just, you know, how the whole small hop industry got jump started. But I wasn't familiar with Vermont. I mean, I can't believe you guys didn't get started till like 2018.
Yeah. So, and this is, you know, getting off on a little bit of a tangent, but for the 3 years preceding the founding of this farm, I worked for the University of Vermont as a researcher, and I worked for a woman named Heather Darby, who is a pioneer in bringing back or kind of evolving a lot of innovative crops in Vermont. And so I did the hop research for her. And by the end of that time, I felt confident enough that this was a good idea. And really in large part, and we can talk about our relationship with Foam, but they are really the only people that are, that we should be talking about this history with, because really we started working together when I worked at UVM, and because they've been so interested in local, since the very beginning of their brewery, we've been able to learn together how to brew with local hops, what's special and unique about them. And we're getting better and better and getting more information over time about that. But it started really, you know, as a research yard at the university, and then now has evolved into a farm, which is our farm is actually the largest hop farm in the Northeast.
So you're the largest hop farm in the Northeast, but you're really pretty small, right?
Yeah. So to give some context, the average farm size in the U.S. is about 700 acres, and our farm is 37 acres of hops.
So you got a long way to go. Let's go. I want to go to Ben and Sam. I know you're together. What's cool about this show is that 2019, we hosted an event in New York City, and we were looking for breweries in the Northeast that were working with local ingredients. And Foam just popped up, and Todd Hare came down with a six-till of something. So this is really fortuitous. I really wanted to talk to Foam for a while. So who wants to start, Ben or Sam? Just talk about your commitment to local ingredients and how you start working with these guys.
It's Bob, but that's okay. I think just from the beginning, from the business plan all the way up through, you know, it's been our ethos and a priority of ours to focus on sourcing quality ingredients in general. And, within that vein, we also wanted to source local ingredients. And luckily in Vermont, there's a lot of quality local ingredients, including hops. And we really have spent a lot of time and energy creating connections with farmers and producers in our community and incorporating that into the beers that we're brewing down here, whether it's a hoppy beer or a fruited beer, mixed culture, saison, all sorts of different things. We've utilized all different types of ingredients, herbs, fruit, grain, and hops. And we've created some pretty interesting beers out of those local ingredients. And it's been pretty fun and exciting to take these ingredients all of this stuff that we can get from our local ag economy and turn it into something that people can enjoy in a glass, beer. And especially on the scale that we're doing it, we're relatively small, but we are, our model is really having people come to us and experience the beer the way that we want them to experience it, which is usually down here on the waterfront of Burlington. It's a if you've been here, you would know it's a beautiful view. You get to look at the great Adirondack Mountains across the lake, Lake Champlain. And a big part of who we are is also connecting with local artists and musicians as well. So it creates a pretty cool vibe down here, and people can really get behind the beer and the story of sourcing those adjuncts and hops and everything that go into it. And like Julian said, we've known each other for quite a while now. I was actually just talking about this today. Julian, I think it must have been probably 8 years ago.
Yeah. 2014 maybe, Julian, if that sounds about right.
We were
at Sweetback at the time.
Yeah. And we've just developed that relationship, and I think it's been great getting to know you even better. And I feel like that the relationship that we have is very similar to a lot of the other relationships that we've cultivated now. And it's just a very casual, comfortable situation where we can go back and forth and exchange ideas and thoughts and, like you said, grow together and create together. And it's definitely a unique experience. And I don't think that by any means every brewer gets to have that experience. And our goal is to really just try to tell that story and explain, you know, where the inspiration came from, and, you know, where the beer scene is going and can go, utilizing all that stuff that is available to us. And maybe Sam, if you want to talk about some of the beers that we've done,
let's hold off on that for a second. Let's go a step back. So, Julian and you guys, let's talk about Vermont Ag. Let's just tell more about how Vermont Ag has influenced what you guys are doing now.
Sure. Yes. So, you know, Vermont traditionally has been a dairy state. So milk and maple syrup, I guess, would be the other, big historical crop for us. And then the secondary product of milk is cheese. And we have many excellent artisan cheeses. And so really that's dairy and for some part maple syrup have really been the dominant kind of agricultural commodities that Vermont has produced. Dairy, it really all farms have gotten bigger and bigger and more consolidated. The dairy industry has shrunk in Vermont. And so it's become more of a mix of, organic vegetable producers and people who are looking at, people who maybe did milk cows previously, who are looking for new crops, innovative ways to keep their farms going.
That's great. So Sam, tell us what beers you guys have made with either single hops or other Vermont hops.
Yeah, there's probably, too many beers for me to just remember off the top of my head, but we've certainly done a number of beers just with Champlain Valley hops, even in the last couple of years. But it all kind of started with a beer called Local Dork, and that goes all the way back to 2016 in the first year we were open, where we had these two guys who are these two just kind of awesome musicians up here, Matt Hagen and Bob Wagner, and they both kind of go off and do their own respective projects in music in and around Burlington and Vermont, but they come together as two people to form a DJ group that they call Local Dork. and it's awesome, and it's all just kind of spinning vinyl, and they kind of have a live microphone, and it can kind of turn into, playing games with, wherever they are and kind of who's in the room that they're in.
Very interactive.
It's certainly very interactive, and it's just a fun thing. But so going back to 2016, we kind of discovered these guys, and they would do every Tuesday night at the brewery. They would do a DJ set and spin vinyl. And I think I want to say we were running a food special at the time, maybe one of those nights.
We were doing special can releases for the community. because we would typically do can releases on Friday and Saturday, and a lot of people in town couldn't come to them for different reasons. So we started getting a lot of feedback saying, can you guys do, can you reserve some cans for the community to, for people to come down and purchase on Tuesday? And it just made more sense for some of those people. So we started doing that. And that's why Local Dork made sense. They would come in and DJ during that can release. So that's where it kind of started.
Yeah. So it all started there, and it did start, that beer did kind of, well, we, you know, got kind of just going all the way back that we kind of decided to do a beer just called Local Dork and name it after, you know, the name of the DJs. But, and that beer kind of utilized, you know, Peterson quality malt, you know, local Vermont grain,
And Homestead hops.
And Homestead hops originally,
which is no longer existent.
But that kind of developed over a couple of years. And now that we've been canning for, about 3 years, last summer, we decided to kind of scale the draft only version of Local Dork up to a beer that would be available in cans for people. And we've done, I believe we've done three of them. Each one has been different. So again, we've done one with Peterson quality malt, and then actually, so we've done four because we've done two, with Champlain Valley hops. And we also did one with Whitefield hops, also, Vermont hop farm. But those have kind of been the, at least for cans and kind of, awesome way to get this local dork beer or just local beer in general, to more people other than people that are just coming into the brew pub. That was kind of the idea for that beer. And, as Julian and Max can kind of tell you, you know, the, one of the coolest beers we did last September was they basically, and right in the middle of their harvest, were able to, as they were harvesting Centennial, load up a truck full and bring it, you know, 3 miles down the road to our production facility and basically dump, you know, 300, 400 pounds of fresh cones into our louder ton, for the brew that day, which became, a wet hop, you know, wet hot double IPA, which was Local Dork.
Yeah, with that volume of hops, we utilized the mash louder ton as essentially as a large hop back. So after the boil, we would run that wort back into the louder ton to soak up the, all the goodness on the cones before we cast it out into the fermenter. And it, man, the aroma of that is just always so epically awesome. And we've done a lot of those wet hop beers over the past several, few years that we've been open, doing, you know, every fall, people start looking forward to it. Now it's harvest season, or when are the wet hop beers going to come around? And we always deem those the local dorks. So it is kind of a changing thing. It's something that isn't always the same hop combination or the same brew necessarily, but we do that with several different variations of different cans and stuff as well, where there's one like headline name, and then there's different variants that fall under that. And Local Dork is one of the cooler ones, in my opinion, especially utilizing the amount of local hops that we're using.
That's crazy.
And it even does turn into its own draft-only versions as well. So, you know, while we were kind of doing the stuff for cans in Hinesburg, Vermont, you know, Bob and the other brewer here, Josh, were doing smaller batches on the 7-barrel system, but just the exact same way in that, you know, hops – at least for the wet hop stuff, we're being harvested that day and being brought down to the brewery within a matter of, you know, an hour.
Yeah. And one last thing to say on that too, is just going back to people coming into Foam and enjoying the vibe and the experience while drinking the beer. It's always a special moment when people come in, when we're doing those wet hop beers, because that, like I said, that aromatic quality is really unmatched and people just love to be, you know, consumed by that. It's like you're walking into essentially a sauna at that point with like steamy hop aroma all around, and it's a pretty unique experience, especially for people that have never really smelled that. Like, and fresh hops are so vibrant and have such a fresh, like, green, citrusy, you know, piney aroma. It's a really unique moment in time.
So what time of year then should I visit you in Burlington for that?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Julian, when you start in harvest this year?
Yeah, so Centennial will be start around August 10th and go for 2 or 3 weeks. But the whole harvest goes basically early August.
The bulk of those beers, like all the wet hop beers are, it's a very short time period, and that's what makes them so special, because it's just in those, you know, the few weeks, the pick windows for those hops. And once they're ready in the field, we plan to be nimble over here and plan for the brew and get it scheduled up and do it. So
man, that's worth the trip, I'll tell you. Hey, let's go back to Julian. So just talk about, as you know, Champagne Valley Hops, and Max, please join in too. Just talk about, we kind of understand how hops have to grow. It takes a number of years and all this, but more about the market. How were you able to, you know, get people into your hops? And how are brewers able to switch from like using pellets to whole cones and other things? Let's go into that phase of your story. It's like you guys are open, you're growing hops, you know, some customer interactions. How about that?
Yeah, I was just going to say that Foam obviously has been an early adapter of our hops, and they're very creative and they're great at coming up with new recipes. And a lot of brewers also want to trial new recipes with our hops. Usually it's not a substitution. So it's not like we're going to take this beer that, you know, everyone loves and swap out, you know, the Cascade they usually use for ours. Yeah, it's a lot more of developing new recipes to highlight local hops and really pass on that information to their customers who are excited about using local ingredients. We've had a ton of positive support from the community. We've done a lot of events where we've gotten people to come out to the farm, brewers to come out to the farm, especially those that haven't been to a commercial hop farm of this size before. It's kind of like a wow moment when they come out here in late June, July, and August and see, you know, the hop yard completely full. It's almost like a jungle. And that really gets them excited and really gets them wanting to use our products.
I'll tell you, about 11 years ago, I was in the south of Netherlands, and right at the Netherlands and Belgium border, there was a big hop field, and it was like covered hills and hills, and I had that moment, and it was really inspiring.
Oh yeah, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, but then like as brewers, but I want more from Julian. You tell us who you are, man. Are you a scientist? You know, how did you train for this? Because hops are pretty sophisticated, aren't they?
There is a lot to learn, and because it's such a small industry, you can't just Google something. There's really, you know, there's these small pockets of people who have been growing hops for generations, and so there's, you got your pocket in the Pacific Northwest in the U.S., and then you've got your German and Czech growers in Europe, and so the research background has been incredibly important for me. And at the same time, all of the networking that I did while I was a researcher has really paid off just as much or more, because really this is, you know, being able to call someone up and say, I don't understand this, or we need to tweak this aspect for like our dryer. You know, we're having issues with our dryer. We want to condition our hops better. I've got a Rolodex of 20 different growers who I send text messages to figure this stuff out. And that's been incredibly valuable for us.
That is really cool, man. The whole thing about is how do you define like Vermont terroir, and generally what are you finding about some of the typical hop varieties that are you're growing in Vermont compared to other parts of the country?
Yeah, so I think I will let Max talk about some of the sensory characteristics that we're learning about from each variety. I'll just say that from the farmer's perspective, that there are so many factors that influence how a hop grows, the soil type, the climate, so like, you know, how wet the region is, the latitude is a huge thing for hops. So, and that's maybe worth describing a little bit. Basically, hops grow incredibly fast. They can grow up to 12 inches a day. And they need to, because they need to grow up this 18 foot tall trellis, in order to get, you know, all that length of the vine, which all the hops grow on. And so in order to put on that much growth in the short summer season, they grow best in areas where you have the most daylight possible, basically. Kind of the most daylight without being super cold, right? So at our latitude, which is 44 degrees, we've got a 15 and a half hour day at the peak of summer, and that they can put on so much growth during that period. And that's the same in Germany where they grow the hops, and that's the same in the Yakima Valley. So anyway, you've got all these different things that are influencing how a hop smells and tastes. And we're just starting to put some kind of numbers and sensory notes to that. And Max will do a better job of describing kind of what we're learning so far, and also the project that we've got going on now to learn more about that and put more specific vocabulary to it.
Yeah. So there's a lot of different ways that people evaluate hops. The most common is probably rubbings, where people take a hop pellet or a dried cone or even a wet cone and kind of massage it into their palm of their hand and then smell, and then come up with certain aroma notes that they would hope would show up in their finished beer. The one thing that complicates that is that brewing adds a lot of heat and fermentation to the process, and that actually changes a lot of the aromas and flavors of these hops. So the best way to evaluate what a hop is going to add to a beer is by actually brewing with it. To complicate that again, a lot of beers are usually brewed with multiple hop varieties. So what we have done is, through the Vermont Hop Project, we've gotten 12 brewers on board to brew a total of 32 single hopped or mostly single hop beers, each one highlighting one of our main varieties. And through this project, we're hoping to learn a lot more about what these individual varieties add to beers and how they differ from the same varieties grown from their conventional producers, usually in the Pacific Northwest. So the results, we're still getting results in now. The project started in March and we'll go through the end of May. But we've learned a lot. I can talk through a few of those notes. Like, for instance, our Cascade has shown to have a lot more floral and orange blossom characteristics than most other Cascades that people are used to brewing with. Our Chinook is a lot more ripe pineapple and bright tropical fruit characteristics rather than the piney characteristics that are usually common from Chinook from the Pacific Northwest. Our Magnum, which is typically used as a bittering hop, and Foam actually just made a great beer with it for the project, has had a lot of fruity characteristics and a great fruity aroma, and we think could be used in a lot more ways other than just for bittering. So those are just a few. Our Crystal has a ton of grapefruit and cedar and pine characteristics and is very bright. So we're hoping to learn a lot through these 32 beers, and we're asking all of the brewers involved in the project to fill out a survey to help give us feedback, to help better explain these hops to other brewers, and hopefully that information will benefit the industry as a whole.
Wow, that's a really great start. We're going to take a short break and be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
This episode is brought to you by Honeycomb Credit. Heritage Radio Network listeners can learn more about the power of community capital by visiting honeycombcredit.com/HRN. We all know that food businesses like yours are the backbone of your community. You make your neighborhood a more delicious place to be, and your customers are hungry for more. Food businesses across the country are working with Honeycomb to open new locations, buy equipment, and grow. You too can unlock fair growth capital by allowing your community to invest directly into your business. A crowdfunded loan from Honeycomb deepens your customer relationships and gives them a whole new way to engage with your business. You'll also get access to thousands of local investors in the Honeycomb network who are passionate about seeing food businesses succeed. Honeycomb is the community bank of the 21st century. Fair rates, flexible terms, and no prepayment penalties. Honeycomb has proven to be an invaluable growth tool for all kinds of businesses, from James Beard-nominated restaurants and upstart food trucks to organic farms and award-winning breweries. Best of all, with Honeycomb, you're paying back your neighbors, not big banks. To learn more about how Honeycomb Credit can help grow your business while building vibrant, financially empowered neighborhoods, visit honeycombcredit.com/HRN.
Hey, 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 welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. It's that time of year. Check us out and become a member at heritageradionetwork.org. So we're talking about Vermont hops with Champlain Valley Hops and Foam Brewers. Let's go to the brewers now, Bob and Sam at Foam Brewers. So we were talking about using new hops or even perhaps single variety hops in a beer. How do you approach that as brewers? How do you modify your recipes, et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, I just to touch on what Max said, I think that's a good intro into this question here. When talking about all the different varietals, cultivars of hops that these guys are growing, you know, it's the Cascade, Chinook, all the stuff that was just discussed. I think people have like a predetermined idea of what the flavor profile should be, right? Like the aroma and taste. And that's because there's these massive farms out west that are producing large scale, you know, ag operation hops. And those are pretty consistently the same. And a lot of those, like Max said, like Chinook is known to be very piney. Cascade is classically grapefruit forward, you know. But the hops that are grown in Vermont are noticeably different. And I think that that is something that really should be noted for brewers that want to brew with this stuff. And I think that it a lot of it is trial and error. A lot of it is experience. And, you know, you could do the rub, you could do all the sensory evaluation of a hop in the field, whether it's, you know, fresh or dried, pelletized. And that's part of the challenge, I guess, and learning curve of a brewer is to understand those aromas in, you know, in just its regular form. And it's, you know, young form, I guess, before it goes into a beer. A raw form, I should say. And you get an idea of what the hop is all about in that rub. But like Max said, there's a lot of stuff that goes on beyond the pelletizing that changes the quality, or not the quality, but the character that you might be smelling originally when it's in a finished beer. And it has to do with the temperature of the boil, whether you're adding it in the beginning of the, you know, for bittering or whatever, if you're doing a whirlpool, and there's just so many steps throughout the way. So, you know, we've been experimenting a lot with different processes to really nail down what works for us, whether it's local hops or not. But we've in particular been really focusing on utilizing as much local hops as we possibly can in the beer. And we actually redesigned, I guess, or added, I should say, a piece in the process in our brewing down here at Foam at the original location here. And what we did was we added a line off the heat exchanger going back into the whirlpool arm on our kettle. And that way we, when we do our big whirlpool additions, we can run it through the heat exchanger and cool the wort in the kettle down to about 180 degrees. And 180 degrees is the magical number because that's where isomerization does not occur anymore. So for those of you that don't know what isomerization is, that's the changing configuration of the molecule, the bittering component of hops, and it's the alpha acids that then convert into bittering compounds that are soluble in water or beer, whatever. And so when we drop the temperature down in the kettle to 180 degrees or slightly below that, basically, we're inhibiting any more bittering from the hops, and we're just really extracting all of the amazingness of what the hop is, you know, the aroma and taste, and trying to pull all of that out because we have the bitter part under control. We have our bittering hops already added at that point, so we have predetermined BU number in mind for whatever beer we're brewing. And then we're really just trying to get like all of those oils and amazing aroma compounds out. So we've been doing that with pretty much every hoppy beer that we do here, includes Champlain Valley hops and also Whitefield hops. But Champlain Valley is a much larger hop farm and we get a lot of hops from them too. So we just have been really working toward incorporating that into pretty much every hoppy beer that we possibly can. And the end result is pretty fantastic. We're getting, like Max said, we're getting pineapple, citrus, you know, all the sexy hop aromas that you might find from West Coast hops or, you know, Australian, New Zealand hops that are notoriously amazing. And we're getting that from hops that are grown here. And it's a really cool thing to really, you know, brew beer regularly and change it up and try different hop combinations or even single hop beers and really like start pulling out notes that are not expected from these cultivars of hops. And like I said, too, like telling that story and explaining that to people and getting them behind that is a pretty, I'm sure people aren't always, they don't know what to expect. And so when they taste something that says that it's with local hops or whatever, I think, you know, people probably are like, what's this all about? And then they taste the beer and they're like, wow, this is actually pretty awesome. It's tropical or, you know, citrus forward. And, I mean, I see it because I'm down here brewing every day and people are in the brewery when we're here brewing and you could see them drinking the beer and get excited about it. And it's a pretty cool thing. And having that connection and, to the farm and to the people and being the intermediate factor of actually making the beer, it's a pretty awesome job.
Let's take a step back, more about hops. So for each of you, think of a more well-known or more available beer that represents a hop to you. Like, is there a beer you think of for Cascade? Not from Vermont, but somewhere else. Is there for example, anybody want to go there?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question because kind of just to touch on what Bob was saying about kind of this awesomeness and this terroir of Vermont grown hops is the fact that we also brew a lot with a lot of the same cultivars from the West Coast, grown out in Yakima. So say Centennial, Chinook, Cascade, Nugget, things like that. But we're brewing almost every day in both locations. And to be able to compare, say, a Centennial grown out in Yakima versus Centennial that's grown in Starksboro, Vermont, you know, they're just completely different beasts, almost to the point where it's hard to even say that it's the same cultivar of hop. But it's just this really interesting thing where being able to brew with both or I think to what you're asking is say, you know, like the classic beer that kind of comes to mind would be Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, which is just kind of a classic for everyone and kind of almost like a awesome, you know, gateway beer into drinking craft beer and discovering what is hoppy, what is bitterness, you know, what does that mean? What does that taste like? What does that smell like? And then to say, compare that to a pale ale that we might do at Foam with Vermont grown Centennial, it's just, a world of a difference. And not to say it's any better or worse, just completely different. So it's fascinating for sure.
No, that's cool. It's there have been so many projects done with single hops and, I really wish I could come and try all of those with you guys. Julian, how is that going? So who is responsible for interacting with the breweries? I keep going back to this, but I always like to hear about the mechanics. Interacting with the breweries for this hop project, is this through sales? Is this separate from sales?
This is Max's baby.
This is me talking to brewers. So it's, I mean, what we try to do which we try to differentiate ourselves from some of the bigger farms, is have close relationships with brewers. So this is me talking to people, texting, emailing, visiting breweries on a regular basis, both for the planning stages of this project and, you know, hearing how the brewing went and, you know, how they're going to go about brewing their next beer for the project, since most brewers are brewing about 3 beers. So I get updates on a regular basis.
So, Max, just tell me about one that you've recently interacted with. Just some anecdotes.
Yeah, so I'll tell you about, so the Rock Art did a centennial beer that I really loved, that they actually put they only dry hopped the beer. And I thought it was the best characteristic of centennial that I have had, with a very lemon lime characteristic, very, very little bitterness, very easy drinking, but incredibly refreshing. And those guys are extremely excited to do a single hopped beer, because they don't usually do that, and they might want to continue to produce that throughout the year.
That's great. So someone has, I want to get more out of Julian. So somebody, let's ask a couple questions of Julian that you guys want to ask him.
Julian, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
What new cultivars are you planting this year?
Good question.
Great question. Yeah, so we planted one new cultivar last year. It's called Triumph, and that's a new public variety. So in hops, we have public varieties, which are available for anyone to grow. And there's also private varieties that are developed by private farms. So that would be like classically like Citra, Mosaic, Galaxy, if you were looking for like a New Zealand hop. And the public breeding program used to be much more prominent. And so that's where you got varieties like Cascade that have, you know, shaped kind of the craft brewing movement so much. But it kind of dropped off as these private companies became more prominent in developing hops. Now, and I think largely from brewer demand too, both brewers and growers have asked for more public support for breeding programs. And so one of the more recent hops that's come out that is supposed to be excellent for for brewing like a hazy IPA is this hop called Triumph. So we're super excited to harvest some Triumph this year. The other variety that we're going to plant this year, and I don't actually know if I told you guys this, Bob and Sam, but we did secure some Comet that we're going to put in the yard as a trial. And these guys specifically asked us to grow Comet. So I know they're going to be excited about that. Partly because they often use, and maybe you want to go into more detail, but they often use Comet as a replacement or a kind of a similar hop to Citra.
Yeah, Max told me that you guys are growing that. I'm pretty excited about that personally.
So what kind of beer would you make with the Comet?
I mean, really any of the IPAs that we do, anything like that in that vein. Comet would be a great hop in, because we do a lot of different types of beer, just in general, a lot of different types of hoppy beer. And I would say the majority of the hoppy beer that we do, the overwhelming characteristic is probably citrus, tropical. And so Comet really fits right into the portfolio of hoppy beers that we do. And like Julian said, anything that has Citra in it, which is a lot of the beer. Built to Spill is Citra Galaxy. Pavement is Citra Mosaic. We have Youth Lagoon, which is all Citra. But I mean, the list goes on and on, but there's, you know, I think that there's a lot of opportunity to develop a whole new brand around this and highlight the fact that it is Comet, and get people to know that it's that something that is equivalent to Citra, and who knows, maybe even better, grown here with the terroir, that that's something that's available to brewers in the state, grown in the state. And that is a pretty cool thing. So, and this Triumph hop as well is going to be pretty exciting. Anything like new that's being grown in Vermont is pretty cool, because we're familiar with the Cascades and Chinooks and all that stuff. So anything that we can get our hands on that is different and grown here, that's not usually grown here, that's pretty cool.
Great.
Pretty exciting.
Comet also has a pretty interesting history, because the kind of hops that brewers have been looking for has changed so drastically over the past 20 years. And so, at the time that Comet was first released, it basically wasn't really what people wanted. I think the brewing industry was much more just kind of lager focused, and craft brewing, hadn't really taken off like it has now. And so some of these varieties, Comet and Cashmere is another one, that are becoming more popular now, are actually these older varieties that were just kind of like way ahead of their time. And people are now rediscovering them and finding that they work super well in the popular beers of today.
So Julian, well, now we can go back to hops. How long does it take you guys to make a producible amount of a certain hop? And just tell us a little bit about the science of hops and growing it.
Sure. So hops are perennial, meaning they come back every year, like on a vineyard or an apple orchard. And it takes a while for them to get established and reach maturity. So a mature hop plant is 3 years old or more. And so it takes, from when you first put them in the ground, you have a waiting period of caring for them and allowing them to build a root mass underground and really get the energy to put out lots of hops. And so within one season, the hops generally come up like now, like literally on Friday, there were little tiny purple buds just peeking out of the soil. And today, which is, so 4 or 5 days later, they're like 6 inches tall. And so basically, as soon as it gets warm, they are just ready to go, and they'll reach the top of the trellis, 18 feet tall, at the summer solstice. So like end of June. And then from that point on, they're basically bushing out, starting to create the flowers, which are the hop cones. And then by early to mid August, we start harvesting the early varieties, and the harvest goes through the end of September.
So you're saying that possibly the best hops are in the areas like yours where there's the longest day?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, it also depends on the variety. So some varieties such as Centennial are known to like even, the longest day possible. So that's, maybe toward like 50 degrees of latitude, and some varieties may be better suited to a lower latitude. So, like low 40s, and then you've got kind of the middle, which is where, most of the yards are. So it's really interesting to see, both which ones do well, but also what characteristics you might get even from growing that same variety at a different latitude. And like I said before, we're at 44, so we're kind of in the middle of that.
And then in your terroir, so besides the longest day, what about soil drainage? Is the soil and everything different in Vermont than out west? Is that part of why things taste different?
It is, and it's also different, like from one side of the town to the other, to be honest. So we actually we're in this really cool geological spot where basically when the glacier was melting, the area that we're in is this corridor that's kind of flanked by two very small mountain ranges. And so the water was channeled through this area and it was moving pretty rapidly. And so the sediments that fell out of that water was only the heaviest stuff, which is like the sand and gravel. And then when the water got out towards the plains and it started moving a lot slower, it dropped out all the clay. And so we've got, down towards the lake, like where the foam brewery is predominantly clay. And up in Starksboro here, which is only a half hour drive away, our soils are very sandy. And we actually have a sand and gravel pit like a mile up the road, you know, where you can go fill up your pickup truck with a load of gravel if you want. And so we picked this spot specifically because of the sand, because for hops, it's very important to have good drainage so that we can create an environment that is not conducive to fungal infection. So basically there are fungal diseases that love cool, damp conditions. And that's our number one pest that we avoid at all costs and fight at all costs, because it can really, damage a crop. And so finding those sandy soils was just a huge opportunity for us to be able to start on a really, at a really good place in making these plants healthy. That said, hops also use a ton of water. And so while we want the water to drain away really fast so that the kind of surface is dry, we also have to bring the water back so that the hops can, have as much water as they need to grow. And so we've got the other great feature of our property is we've got a creek running through it. And so we use drip irrigation that puts the water right to the plant roots. And that comes right out of our creek.
Well, now I get to ask you about yourself. So what is your typical day like? Or you could just tell me what you did yesterday or today, besides picking up granite or gravel from the the quarry.
Sure. Yeah. It always starts with a team meeting. So we like to keep the meetings pretty short in the morning, but, it's always good to start the day. And when I say team, I mean our field team. And so everyone's got their projects for the day, and our season is very segmented. So it's kind of like we have these big projects that go for a month or 6 weeks. And so one part of the season looks very different from the next part of the season. Right now we're getting ready for stringing, which is one of our biggest projects. And so we're just doing a lot of odd jobs. We're fixing irrigation. We are modifying tools that we can use for cultivating the hops. And we're getting the trellising ready, cutting down old strings that were hanging from the trellis to make sure that it's nice and clean so we can start tying strings next week.
Wow. And your title is you're a farm manager, right?
Yeah. So, and I got a little distracted, but so I'll start the day with our team meeting. And then typically after that, I'll go up to the field, take a look at the hops. On Tuesdays, and today's a Tuesday, I have a sales meeting with Max at 10. So we're kind of on sales. Again, this time of year, it's a lot of preparation. And so coordinating deliveries of a lot of raw materials, irrigation supplies, fertilizer, that kind of stuff.
Wow. And then Max, what is your sales meeting with Julian like? What kind of information are you exchanging?
We're talking about obviously sales for the week, new customers that were added, strategy and leads, brewery updates, beer releases with our hops, plans for our social media presence that week, different marketing activities, because I do marketing as well. We're currently working with a marketing team to redo our website and create an online store. So trying to figure out a bunch of shipping issues. Right now I'm battling to try to get a hop shipment over to a brewery in Quebec. And I've realized that, especially in the COVID era, that's a little bit more difficult than it originally had sounded. So a lot of behind the scenes, administrative, logistical things. Taking a lot of notes on all of the interactions I have with brewers, so that I can, who I need to follow up with. And then lots of phone calls, lots of texting, lots of emails. And a couple days a week, usually I'll do site visits and visit breweries, talk to brewers, bring them hops, pick up beer, stuff like that.
So you're a New York boy, you're up in Burlington. So I know you're all work. So when you go to visit, tell me a brewery that you visit other than Foam that you like to have a beer at, and what beer do you might have had recently?
I was at Black Flannel recently. I had a beer that they had made for the Vermont Hop Project that used our Magnum. And it was actually the first single hopped Magnum beer I'd ever had. So it was kind of like a eureka moment to really rediscover this hop and really hear from the brewer and their staff what they thought about it. And, you know, I can use that information in future sales, and also feels good to know people really like our products.
Yeah. Now back to Foam. So you guys, it's Bob and Sam. Bob Grimm.
Yes, sir.
And Sam Keen.
That's awesome.
I love those names. So we're having a lot of fun here. And so when Foam started, I just want to hear a quick evolution of your actual brewing, you know, from when it started to having this production brewery and what you guys have learned and you know, just a little bit of shop talk.
Who wants it? I'll go. You go ahead.
Sure.
And say your name, too, because I'm getting confused.
Okay, this is Sam now.
Okay, Sam Keen.
Sam Keen. As you probably learned from the bios, but we Bob and myself both kind of started our brewing careers at Switchback Brewing Company, which is down the road, also in Burlington, Vermont. But as we are talking about Foam, we had each kind of came into Foam with different aspects of brewing experience. Bob had kind of been doing, a pilot system or experimental system, whereas I had been kind of brewing the same thing every day, totally different brew house, but kind of compiling that experience and dropping that into Foam with our other partner, Todd Hare, who has been brewing for decades at this point and is currently our brew master. We found the spot at the waterfront and we're just ecstatic to know that we had kind of secured a lease and had a space that we could call our brewery. And it was just so funny early on because we actually did the demo of the space ourselves. And that was including our other partners, John Farmer and Danny Casey. And we would basically just kind of do demo through kind of the day. And at that time, I mean, you know, people were also doing different things during the day, but we would basically kind of fire up the brew house at night. And that was how we filled our first, four, five fermenters?
Yeah, it was either three or four.
We started and by the way, the first hop delivery that I made to these guys was like full demolition zone at night, I think. Yeah. There was like pretty poor lighting.
No lighting. And I think he brought it in like a big like contractor bag.
Yeah. Definitely. And that's just kind of the way it went as we were gearing up for our opening, which was April 2016. So we are coming up on 5 years. It's insane that it's been that long looking back at it now. But that's kind of the way it was. We were kind of doing demo and build out of the space from, 7, 8 a.m. up until 4 or 5 p.m. And then as kind of other tenants in the building would clear out around 5 p.m., we would start firing up the brew house and just kind of brew through the night with, just little construction lights here and there while the dust settled around us. And that's kind of where the first few brands of Foam Brewers beer was born.
I'm going to leave it at that because that's beautiful. I'm really getting a sense of this Burlington community. I'd never been there. I didn't realize how special it was sitting on the banks of that Lake Champlain. I want to ask the last question of the Champlain Valley Hops guys. Maybe Julian, since you're a farmer, and Max, because you're in sales, as many of us know from history, you know, the rise and fall of farms and agriculture can be quite scary. You know, a bad storm. There's things that you guys have to deal with that, you know, a steel factory doesn't have to. What's your projection for the next couple of years? You know, you guys are the largest hop farm in New England, but you're still very tiny. Where is this going, and what do you fear? Like, this, let's put it out there. What's your biggest fear right now as a very small hop grower?
Yeah, good. That's a good question. That really cuts to the core. I think I'll start by saying that because we, you know, farms are subject to the kind of risk that you're talking about, and largely you can attribute that to the weather, right? Although farms are also subject to rising and falling commodity prices, which can be just as destructive as the weather. But, you know, being having a business that is so tied to something that you have no control over, I think actually teaches you a lot of really great lessons about, you know, just being able to roll with the punches. And so I think in general, we're pretty good at that. COVID has been a real sucker punch for sure. You know, really for the brewers and then us, and in a secondary sense to us, because what affects them affects us. And so I'd say what's keeping me up at night is worrying when the people are going to come back to the bar and come back to the brew pub. And I hope it's soon.
That's great, man. And talking to you guys, I almost forgot of the stupid pandemic anyway. So thanks for bringing it home, brother. Yeah. And that's why we're doing this remotely instead of me being up there or you guys being in our studio in Brooklyn. And Max, thanks for putting the show together, brother. Anything else you want to say before we close out?
Yeah, well, thank you for having us. You know, it's awesome to do this. You know, we're so appreciative of Foam and the relationship that we've built together. And we're really excited to help build the commercial New England hop industry together and help them continue to make fantastic beer.
That's great, man.
Thank you, guys. I mean, the feeling is definitely mutual.
100%. 100%. We're looking forward to the harvest.
All right. That's when I'm going to be up there. Hop harvest up in near Burlington. Thank you guys so much. I'm going to thank Bob, Sam, Julian, and Max for joining me here on Heritage Radio Network. Big shout out to our engineer, Armin Spingen, and our producing intern, Caroline Fox. I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Woo.
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.